is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Holly with the Whole Health Initiative, and welcome to Wednesday, the 16th. I just had a birthday yesterday. Holy cow. That means we're getting real close to Christmas. Holy cow again. Anyways, today we're going to talk about indigestion on a number of different levels for a number of different reasons and see how simply we can solve them. So your GI, your gastrointestinal tract, or GIT, it needs to be healthy for a lot of different reasons. So simply put, it helps you to digest what you eat and drink. It helps you to absorb the nutrients you need and eliminate what isn't good for you. So to help achieve that, 70% of your immune system is actually in the gut. Now, actually 72%. And on some variables, it actually goes up to 90% of your immune system is in the gut. So that needs to be effectively supported as well. Now, having said that, there's all kinds of reasons that all kinds of people suffer from different types of indigestion. The ability to digest effectively may actually start with your mouth, the oral cavity, and go all the way down to your rectum. In fact, if you look at it from a given perspective, that is just one long tube. The tube changes dramatically throughout its process, but it's one long tube that can have all kinds of different issues. For instance, it may start in the mouth with insufficient bacteria or incorrect pH or low enzymes, for instance, your amylases. So, say, it may start with reflux or go further down with heartburn. It may be bloating, gassing, crapping, or in the intestinal area. There may be a variety of inflammatory issues in the gut, like leaky gut syndromes or ulcerations. There may be loose or constipated stools from the colon. Various types of disruptions, most of which are easily resolved, can occur in that tract. So let's look at each component specifically. And that's where I started with, okay, let's start with the mouth. How to maintain a healthy mouth so you don't have teeth issues, gum issues, or digestion issues. The number one thing I say to my client is give up that Crest and Colgate. They are horrific. They're full of sugar. They have a GMO corn in them, and they have a variety of toxins in them. So right on the tube, don't swallow. How do you tell a child, how do you help a child not to swallow their toothpaste? Children are always swallowing their toothpaste. So what do we do instead? Well, you get rid of the crap and you buy some really good stuff. Now, use a natural toothpaste. The one I use is Furlow's, and they have a neem toothpaste. It can come in different flavors. It's mint or anise. Anise is a licorice flavor. But neem is a really, really good herb for the mouth. It's good for all kinds of wonderful stuff. It's antimicrobial. It's nutrient dense, et cetera, et cetera. So it helps to eliminate the bad bacteria. It helps to support the good bacteria, and it helps to support the pH in the mouth, which supports the good bacteria. This allows for the mouth to create amylase enzymes, which is the first of your digestive processing, chemical processing. So there's lots of other good toothpaste out there. It's not like that's the only one, but it's the one that I prefer. I love Furlow products. They are very good products. They're high-quality products, and I love their neem toothpaste. You can go to Furlow online. It's F-E-R-L-O-W, and get all kinds of products from them. They are good products. So after your food goes or your drink goes through your mouth, it then obviously has to go down your throat. And the typical issue people have is with the lower esophageal sphincter. like a valve that allows the food to go from the throat into the stomach. Now, usually, problems with the sphincter are what cause reflux. Reflux is an issue with the lower esophageal sphincter. Now, is it opening and closing properly? You don't want the hydrochloric acid from the stomach to come up into the esophagus or into your throat. So an easy way to solve the problem, if it's the sphincter itself, is to take a quarter of a teaspoon of baking soda and a quarter of a cup of water. You swish, gargle, and swallow every morning. It will usually take, and actually I've just put every morning. You should do it both morning and night. And if you do that, typically within 2 weeks, your reflux is gone. You haven't managed it. You've eliminated the issue. So, and another one that can help with that is if you drink a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and a cup of water before bed. The apple cider vinegar becomes an alkaline ash once it's gone through the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, and it can clean up the pyloric valve going from the stomach to the small intestine, which will eliminate heartburn. So doing the, I tell a quick story. When my mom had Lewy body syndrome, and it had advanced quite far, we couldn't alter it. It seemed to have started when she had a hip operation. And I went to the surgeon, and he said, no, there's no way she could have the toxicities I was suggesting she might have from the hip operation. He sent me a 4-page letter. I went back to the family physician, and because she has a lot of faith in me, she actually went and got the real expensive test that we needed to confirm that, yes, she did have huge toxicities to the two that I said she had. And that started a whole issue of process of issues for her that we had to keep trying to alter. But point being is it was one Christmas dinner where I'm up there, and she's saying, you know, every time she eats, she has to go lay down. She's got this reflux is happening, and it's really hard on her. And if she lays down for about 20 minutes, then it goes away. Well, I couldn't figure out. She was having a really hard time identifying different things going on in the body at that point. I couldn't figure out whether it was the esophageal sphincter, the lower esophageal sphincter going from the throat down to the stomach, or the pyloric valve going from the stomach to the small intestine, because she really couldn't identify what was going on, just that it was causing her a lot of problems. So I said, don't worry about it. And I got Dad to give her the apple cider vinegar, sorry, just the baking soda. We did, not the apple cider vinegar, just the baking soda, both morning and night. And my dad was really disciplined about giving her whatever we attempted with her. So it's about 2 weeks later. I phone her every day. She's got dementia by that time, so I say, hi, it's Holly, your daughter, so that she knows who it is. And she's, oh, I've been meaning to tell you. I used to get, she went into the long protocol about how she suffered and had to lay down, blah, blah, blah. I don't have it anymore, and I don't know why I don't have it. I said, has Dad been giving you that stuff to swish, gargle, and swallow every morning and every day? Oh, yeah, I hate that stuff. Why am I doing that? Well, you just answered your own question. You got rid of the problem. So it can be that easy. When you take things like acids, you're managing the symptom in the short term but causing problems in the long term. Okay? So, again, to clean up the lower esophageal sphincter, is the quarter teaspoon of baking soda and a quarter of a cup of water, swish, gargle, and swallow. Do that every morning and every night for about 2 weeks, and you'll solve the problem if it's the sphincter that's causing the problem. Okay? Now, if it's the stomach, the actual hydrochloric acid in the stomach, and please note that it's not that you have too much. For most people, it's that you don't have enough. So if you don't have enough hydrochloric acid, then you don't have the pressure to keep the valve closed properly. So then we want to help you increase the hydrochloric acid, not decrease it. So what is the hydrochloric acid there for? Well, you know, it helps you to break down the proteins. It kills off all kinds of pathogenic components in your food, which is natural to your food. And it's loaded with enzymes for digestions. It helps the absorption of things like B12 and iron. But it can cause problems if there's insufficient. It can cause problems with the pressure against both the lower esophageal sphincter, again, from the throat to the stomach, and the pyloric valve from the stomach to the intestines. So an additional thing that we can do is increase the hydrochloric acid. Now, there's various enzyme supplements that can help you with the enzyme issue. Zinc is used to produce more hydrochloric acid, and zinc, of course, is found in beef, beans, yogurt, nuts, seeds, oysters, lobster. Good reason to eat or your lobster. I love lobster. Another one is ginger. It's a great anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial for the throat, but also helps to relieve inflammation in the stomach due to low stomach acid. Okay, fermented foods like sauerkraut, kimchi, pickles, etc., naturally improve the level of hydrochloric acid. So once again, we're going back to the old healthy ways of eating. Now, these fermented and pickled foods not only improve digestion in general, but they also improve the hydrochloric acid production in the stomach. Okay, so I would encourage you to do your own. When they put in stabilizers into pickled foods, fermented foods, etc., the stabilizers that give them shelf life will also kill the very bacteria that you want from them. So they're easy to make. They're easy to do. Make a family day out of it. And then the kids get to watch the fermentation or the pickling take place. Okay, another issue. Reduce sugar. How many times and how many ways for how many reasons do we say reduce the sugar? Reduce the processed foods. Other issues that may include are, again, the antacid medication itself. So you're taking the medication to reduce the reflux, but it's actually causing more of an issue. Other prescription drugs can cause problems as well. Infections, chronic illness, food sensitivities can also contribute or cause the problem. Just simply not chewing well enough can actually contribute to the problem, because when you don't chew enough, you're not getting the amylases, the enzymes, into the food to help break it down, and you're putting more of an onus on the stomach to do that with the hydrochloric acid. Okay, so we want to chew well, we want to eat our fermented and pickled foods, and we want to make sure that we have good valves operating. Consequently, we're going to take the baking soda and water. Now, the reason, again, to take the apple cider vinegar is it's not so much the baking soda, although that can help as well, but taking a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in a glass of water will help clean up the pyloric valves. And in addition to that, it helps the pH of the entire intestinal tract. So you say, well, it's acidic. Why would we do that? Well, by the time it gets through the hydrochloric acid of the stomach, it becomes an alkaline ash, which is very effective. Okay? So simple thing to do is take the baking soda protocol in the morning, the apple cider vinegar at night, do it for 2 weeks, and you clean up both valves and help the hydrochloric acid in your stomach. Pretty awesome. Now, you don't want to do that forever. The baking soda actually can, if you keep doing that, can take the, and so can the actual apple cider vinegar, deteriorate the enamel on your teeth. So you only do it when necessary. It's not an ongoing issue that you do for the rest of your life. Just do it for a short period to help solve the problem, and then let's go from there. All right, so now we've gone through the pyloric valve from the stomach into the intestines. So what about the intestines? Well, the first one are the long intestines. They can be 25, 30 feet of small intestine all scrumpled up in your gut. Note that your intestines is not your stomach. Your stomach is separate from your intestines. Your stomach has the hydrochloric acid, it has the pyloric valve, and then that goes into the duodenum, or the first stretch of your small intestines. When food comes from the hydrochloric acid in the stomach, which can go down to 1.9 pH, it's incredibly acidic. I'll just give you a little side trip here. School way back when, and you had the chemistry project of taking a glass of Coca-Cola and putting a nail in it. After a week, that nail would get rusty due to the acid in the Coca-Cola. If you take the hydrochloric acid from your stomach and do the same experiment, the nail will go rusty within an hour. So it has the same pH, but it has an entirely different type of acid, which would actually hugely impact. But that acid is really, really important. The problem is, by the time it gets through your food gets through the hydrochloric acid through the pyloric valve, it needs to be up to a pH of about 3.5 in the duodenum to continue on down the GI tract. Now, in your small intestines, you can have all kinds of other issues. You could have inflammatory bowel disorder. You could have IBD or IBS, inflammatory bowel syndrome. You could have ulcerative colitis. You could have Crohn's disease. You may suffer from things like diverticulitis or leaky gut syndrome or H. pylori. And, of course, you have a huge immune system in your gut that you need to take care of. So there's lots of issues that can go sideways. So let's look at some of them. You know, of course, that you should be eating pre- and probiotics. Your prebiotics being your fibers, your soluble and non-soluble fibers. Your probiotics being the good bacteria that help your immune system and help keep the bad guys under control. They also can produce a huge number of things for your body, from neurotransmitters to enzymes, proenzymes, coenzymes. They can produce all kinds of nutrients as well as help digest your system. So, for instance, I have a genetic disorder. With my genetic disorder, I don't make a neurotransmitter called GABA. Consequently, I grew up with seizures. And we found out it was a genetic disorder, and I could simply help that out by getting the bacteria in my gut to make GABA. Well, golly gee whiz, I could go off all the medications and all the side effects due to all the medications and control the seizures. I haven't had a seizure for like 40 years. Actually, not true. More like 20 years. I started seizures up again when I was in naturopathic college, which was why I had to leave naturopathic college. I have both myoclonic seizures and petit mal seizures starting up again there, and it's like, oh dear, I don't want to go into the grand mals. We're stopping this. But in the process, I've learned what foods I need to eat to get the bacteria that produce the GABA for me. So your microbiota is incredibly important to your system for a lot of different reasons. Another side trip on that, when I was in naturopathic college, and that's like 20 years ago, we only knew of 500 plus different good bacteria from the gut and the limited number of things they could do. We now know there's over 35,000 different possibilities, and they do a huge number of things. So science has come an awful long way since then. Okay, so you know your pre- and probiotics. Now you also need anti-inflammatory foods. Your gut is hugely dependent on a lot of good omega-3s. Your omega-6s are your pro-inflammatories. Your omega-3s are your anti-inflammatories, and we're always really low in them, or usually really low in them when it comes to our diet. So how do you get really good omega-3s into your diet? Well, one thing is with avocados, whether the food or the oil, the fruit or the oil. Avocados have about the same ratio of omega-3, 6, and 9 that our bodies have, and that includes your DHAs and your EPAs, which are really, really important to the body. Your body can use those to make the ALAs. Berries are really good polyphenols, and in particular the anthocyanins. They're great antioxidants, and they're great anti-inflammatories. Your broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, and kale, they all contain serofan, which most is in the broccoli, which is a great antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. It works by reducing the cytokines, which are the little messengers that run through the body, and the nuclear factor kappa Bs that drive inflammation. Cherries have great polyphenols, again, the anthocyanins, as well as the catechins, which are anti-inflammatory. Chocolate has the most powerful of the anti-inflammatory polyphenols, again, the anthocyanins, and a variety of different types of catechins. And it's actually interesting, the most powerful ones in food are in chocolate. But you have to eat the real good chocolate. You can't eat the Mars bar, so the O. Henry or whatever. You need, and I would suggest you need 88% or higher. Don't eat less than that. You want those good polyphenols. Okay, so you know your fatty fish has the omega-3s, the EPAs, and the DHAs. I do suggest not to eat the salmon anymore. We used to always suggest eat salmon for the good omega-3s, but they have higher and higher levels of the radiation material that's still coming out of Japan into the ocean. So what we eat instead is the steelhead trout, which is the freshwater trout compared to the saltwater, freshwater salmon. I don't know why it's called trout. It's a freshwater salmon. By the time it gets to the ocean, it's then called a salmon, but for some reason in the lakes, it's called steelhead trout. Grapes are great. Again, anthocyanins and other polyphenols like resveratrol. Mushrooms are great for the beta glycans, which really help inflammatory systems. It's really good for your gut. peppers, antioxidants, quercetin, vitamin C. I put this in the wrong line. I've got truffles, portobellos, shiitake, lion's mane, turkey tail. That should be in the prior line with the beta glycans. They are fantastic. Peppers, the antioxidants, quercetin, and vitamin C. Vitamin C is highest in your red bell peppers. That's why I often tell people eat your red bell peppers daily for your vitamin C. Tomatoes have all kinds of good stuff in, but lycopene in particular is not just good for the eyes, but it's also a great antioxidant and an anti-inflammatory. Turmeric, as you know, is great for everything. Joke goes, it's anti-everything, we just can't find uncle. So it's anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, anti-cancer, anti-everything. But turmeric is very, very hard to absorb. And 80% of the world's sources of turmeric are, in fact, toxic. So you want to make sure you get a very good clean, which I always suggest get Sevanti, S-E-W-A-N-T-I. Sevanti is a very clean. It's gone through three different laboratories to make sure that it is clean. So then what do we do to absorb it? Now that we have a clean turmeric, what do you do to absorb the curcumin? You need the omega-3. So mix it with avocado oil. Heat it up and mix it with avocado oil. The oils will then attach to the curcumoids so that you can then absorb them. That helps it get across the mucosal membrane into the portal blood, but now it's in the liver, and the liver needs to metabolize it. In order to metabolize it, the liver needs pepper. So work with putting pepper into your omega-3s and your curcumin. Then we have the glutathione. You knew I had to address that. Glutathione is always my favorite compound. So why do we need glutathione? Well, it's in every cell of the body, including every cell of your GI tract. So it becomes important to digestion. It helps to regulate an awful lot of compounds. It helps the cells to do the processing that the cells need to do along that mucosal membrane. One of the things it does in a cell is it transports all your amino acids in, or most of your amino acids in a cell. So just on that level alone, for cellular detoxification, you need glutathione. For all kinds of things inside the cell, glutathione is hugely important, as well as it's a massive antioxidant, so it helps to keep all those free radicals down. Now, an easy and simple solution to increase your glutathione, of course, is taking NAC because of what's going on internationally with the jab. And we know the jab depletes your glutathione level, so people are saying take NAC. Well, that is a really good thing because NAC and acetylcysteine. Cysteine is the most unstable of all the amino acids, so you tend to lose it faster. So the N-acetyl helps stabilize it, so it has the cells have a chance to absorb it. And the cysteine is part of the glutathione complex. So that's great. Now we've got the compounds to make the glutathione. The problem is you shouldn't be taking it for more than maybe 2 months. The reason being is your body should be making cysteine. It can make cysteine from methionine and serine, and you don't want to stop your body from making it. So I will suggest to my clients, don't take it any longer than 2 months so that you don't interfere with your body's capacity to make cysteine as well. Okay, now, the challenge is to make glutathione in a cell, you need healthy mitochondria. The mitochondria produces the energy that the enzymes need in order to make glutathione. So you have to have good, healthy mitochondria. You also need to have healthy methylation cycles. There's a variety of them, but they're involved in about 80% of what a cell does. And your cells need the methylation cycles to make glutathione. Okay, so let's back up a bit. What do we need for the basic mitochondria? Magnesium and iron are huge. Magnesium is used 180 times in the whole ATP process. About 78% of the time that you have magnesium, you're using B1, 2, and 3. You also need B9, C, E, K, CoQ10. You need some amino acids like carnitine and citrulline, and you need the omega-3s, DHAs and the EPAs. And you also need vitamin C. And you, I always said, see, it was iron. You need, at the end of the process, you need two different types of iron. So that's really good as well. So magnesium, iron, your B vitamin, C, E, K, amino acids, CoQ10, and your omega-3s. Now, you also need the methylation cycle. So what do you need to make sure you've got for the methylation cycle to work? B2, 6, B9, B12, choline, betaine, which is found in beets and spinach, magnesium, zinc. And to get those, you can eat chocolate, meat, fish, shellfish, legumes, and seeds. So those are the nutrients you need, and those are the foods you can get them in. So together, we may need to make sure that we are getting sufficient good nutrients. Amino acids, B vitamins, magnesium, I should have put iron and zinc, omega-3s. So what can we look for? At the most basic level is your avocados, oils, which have all your amino acids in, chocolate that has over 1,400 compounds in, nuts and seeds, and your cruciferous vegetables like your broccoli, cauliflower, etc. Now, you may also have problems with the gut lining, diverticulitis, ulcerations, leaky gut syndrome. So let's look at some of those issues and find out what we can do for that. There's a great number of herbal tinctures that are used to repair the mucosal lining of your intestine, small and large. The two that I use the most for that are Althea and Slippery Elm. You can also use licorice as a supplement. You get it as DGL. And there are protocols using aloe vera and good honey. Now, what I mean by good honey is that the beekeepers don't use high fructose corn syrup to get their honeybees hive started or to support them over the winter. That's what used to be done, and I didn't like that. In addition to that, they now do it on a regular basis because the bees produce more honey. The problem is the DNA of the bees have changed because of that, and so has the nutrient profile of the honey. So I don't know if you can find someone in your neck of the woods, so to speak, that has a good honeybee hive that is fed honey, not high fructose corn syrup, and who feeds off good, healthy nutrient like wild blueberry that hasn't been challenged because of sprays and other toxins. So we have a very, very good one for that. So, and of course, it has to be unpasteurized. The pasteurized honey is basically sugar. It eliminated the good, healthy nutrients, and you don't have fiber, and now you just get a lump of sugar that tastes good. So I strongly suggest do some basic research on your honey and on who's providing the honey, and make sure that you're eating good, healthy honey, and that can help with both leaky gut and ulcerations. Other things that can help, especially with the ulcerations, are garlic, honey, and turmeric. Turmeric we've already gone through. Honey we've already gone through. So let's momentarily look at the garlic. You have over 300 different species. They basically all taste the same. You have to be a really, really good connoisseur to be able to taste the difference between the different types of garlic. And if you're a chef, you probably can. I can't. But what we grow here in the Northwest is mostly red Russian garlic. Now, note Russian garlic and elephant garlic are not actually garlics. Those are leeks. But red Russian garlic is a garlic, and it grows well in the Northwest. So look, again, do your research and find out what garlic does well in your area. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, especially in the north, the north half of the Northern Hemisphere, it's a good idea to start planting your garlic out in the yard now. Garlic loves good cold weather. So if you start planting it now in the spring, you'll get lots of really wonderful garlic. Okay? Now, if you have mucosa, and what we're using garlic for is an antimicrobial. It helps the immune system. It has 350 nutrients that are really good for you. It also has the 33 different sulfuric compounds, which are really great for making glutathione. Okay. Now, if you have mucosal issues, you're more than likely going to have pH issues, which may have caused the mucosal issues, but it may also be a result. So a good herb to correct the pH balance from your mouth all the way down to your rectum is a herb that's called filipendula, or aka meadowsweet. It really well, and it works really well with Althea and Slippery Elm, so that you can correct the mucosal membrane and the pH at the same time. As we've already said earlier, using the apple cider vinegar and the baking soda protocols can also help regulate your pH in your intestines. Now, what if you have H. pylori? Well, if you go to the MDs, they will give you a three-component antibiotic that may help, although to date I've not found someone that's gone through my clinic where it did help. But the claim is that it helps resolve it. But what we use is turmeric. We've talked to you about turmeric. And I mix it with black seed oil or black cumin, a.k.a. black cumin. Wormwood walnut works even better when you combine it with cinnamon, nutmeg, cardamom, and cloves. So that's a really good solution. You can make it either in a tincture or you can mix it in with real honey. Again, really good. Remember, non-pasteurized. And with make sure the hive producers don't use high fructose corn syrup. Along with that, you want to have a diet that's rich in broccoli for the sulforaphane. Okay, so now we've got rid of issues in the mouth. We've got issues in the stomach, and we've eliminated issues in the small intestine. We're going to move on to the large intestine. And I just thought we didn't do anything with the appendix. Appendix happens at the interface between the small intestine and the large intestine. I didn't even put it in here. But we will continue on anyway. Maybe next week we'll look at the appendix. There are various issues that can center around the colon, for instance, things like constipation, polyps, etc. Constipation can be a result of issues that we've already discussed. All those different things could cause constipation. Simple solutions for constipation can be increasing your dietary fiber. And again, I say to my clients, the simplest thing is to eat a Granny Smith apple every day. You're getting all your quercetin, you're getting good nutrient, you're getting soluble and non-soluble fiber. It is a great way to go. Works better for your cholesterol readings. It works better for your gut. It works just for all kinds of different things. Those Granny Smith apples are really good for you. So plant one in your front yard if you like. I've got one in my backyard. Front yard, plant one in your yard. I don't care where, but plant them, use them, eat them. They are fantastic. Okay, so you want to increase your dietary fiber, but you might also need to increase your fluids. Are you drinking sufficient fluids? And there's a big issue that I never heard of until I went to naturopathy college, is your toilet habits. People that sit on the toilet and read can have issues, as well as people who need to go. The body tells them they need to go, but they're too busy doing what they're involved in, and they put off and put off and put off going to the bathroom. Either way, that can interfere with your natural capacity to eliminate. So have healthy toilet habits. Then there's a structural kind of issues. For instance, if you have polyps or a distorted colon, your colon can be too thick, too thin, twisted, turned around, fallen down, all kinds of things can happen to that large intestine. Fissures are a tear in the intestine. Hemorrhoids can be swollen or inflamed veins. You can have blocked anus glands or abscesses that need to be drained, and you could have a frayed vagus nerve. So all those things can actually cause problems as well. So one of the things you can use is psyllium. That's a good stool softener. You can use supplements like serotonin and 5-HTP as well as pre and probiotics. You can improve dietary fiber, increasing your fluid intake, be wiser about toilet habits. But what if you have an issue with the vagus nerve? The vagus nerve is what stimulates that movement going through the intestine. So it's the motility of the movement. And it may sound weird, but one of the things that they have found that can improve your vagus nerve, so you have, let me just backtrack a little bit there, you have 12 cranial nerves. The vagus nerve is the 10th one. That one goes and stimulates all your different herbs. I've got somebody phoning. I'm just trying to let them know that we're on the radio. Please don't phone. One of the things that we can do to increase the vagus nerve functioning has to do with singing, humming, chanting, even deep breathing, deep, slow breathing, and focusing more on the out-breath and the in-breath. All those types of things can actually increase the vagus nerve capacity to function. Other things include massage and reflexology can stimulate the vagus nerve and strengthen it as well. So if you go to the article, I've actually given you a website that you can go to that has 25 different references for the clinical studies done on how these things can help stimulate, strengthen the vagus nerve so that it is stimulating the colon the small intestine and the large intestine to function properly so that you have good bowel movements. Now, a supplement you can take is a compound that the body actually makes, and that supplement is called PQQ. That's an acronym for a 25-letter word that we can't pronounce. But PQQ does a couple different things. It can replace neurons or frayed nerves. It can heal them. If it can't do it directly, what it'll do as well is stimulate the neural growth factor, and in turn, both of them can stimulate new stem cells, neural stem cells, that then can be trained and replace the damaged neuron or help the frayed nerve. So there's that we can work with as well. I use that as a last resort for constipation, and only if we find that there's damaged nerves. It can be used. I use it a lot for a lot of neural things, for everything from strokes and dementias, Parkinson's, when you've had children that have PTSD or ADD, all kinds of different issues, the PQQ can be wonderfully helpful for. Now, if you have colon polyps, there are two types, non-neoplastic that do not become cancerous, and the neoplastic ones, which are larger and have a possibility of becoming cancerous. So just because you've got polyps, don't assume that it's cancerous, because the majority are not. Now, to help eliminate them, we use an anti-inflammatory diet, we take extra D3, we reduce the weight, and we find out if you actually have nutritional deficiencies. Okay? Now, if you have a fissure, then we can look at the options that we've discussed for the mucosal lining. If you have hemorrhoids, there are another few options. Again, psyllium is a fiber that you can use to stop and soothe. Pre and probiotics can help hemorrhoids. But specific herbs that we use are like witch hazel, goldenrod, gotocola, and yarrow. They can all help with that. So the final component that may help regulate all the above are your transfer molecules. We keep bringing those up. My favorite compound is glutathione. My favorite molecule are the transfer molecules. They actually carry information. They're the only molecules in the body that actually carry information. Our 8 different categories, 6 are predominant in the gut, and they help to, reprogram the immune system. Well, that's pretty important to the gut, considering 72% of your immune system is in the gut. So what do they do? Well, one of the things they do is they reprogram the cells. They help communications within the cells. They help communication between cells. And they are really effective in effect, reprogramming the immune system. So when we're looking at people that got the jab, one of the big things we're looking at is what kind of transfer molecules do you need to help reprogram your system and eliminate all the crapola that you just got injected into your body. So if you're interested in that, there's lots of companies that produce the different ones. But by far, I've researched companies around the world, from Germany and Russia, throughout the U.S. and Canada and the States, in Australia, et cetera. And I work with the one that I found was by far leaps and bounds above and beyond everybody else. And one of the reasons for that, I would assume, is because they work with the Cleveland Medical Research Center. So the Cleveland Research Center is recognized around the world, and they work directly with them. So to give you an example, any of my cancer patients, I always have a link up directly with them because they have a phenomenal protocol and successful, of course. But we have different types of transfer molecules for the gut, for the skin, for the eyes, for the brain, for the liver, for the kidneys, et cetera, throughout the entire body. So we need to know the appropriate types, what protocol you might need. Now, having said that, if you're interested in getting it at member prices, you can sign up to the company as a member and just order it for your own. If you want that, you can simply email me, holly@choicesunlimited.ca, and I can connect you with the company if you're interested in that. It's a great way to get the member prices otherwise, and to get a hugely quality than you can get anywhere else. Okay? So if you want to maintain and support a healthy diet, if you want to support a healthy gut, eat a healthy diet. Sorry about that. So let's make it as simple and short and sweet as we can. You want your avocados for your omega 3, 6, and 9. You want your cruciferous vegetables for your solid things and for your pre-probiotics. cabbage being fantastic for that. Pickled and fermented foods for your pre and probiotics. Chocolate for over 1,400 different nutrients. Hemp oil has all your amino acids, both your essential and non-essential. Himalayan salt for all your minerals, including your trace minerals. Mushrooms for your beta-glycans. Herbs like garlic, ginger, and turmeric, you utilize them well and wisely, but make sure you got good, healthy ones. And again, an example I give with the garlic, don't buy garlic grown in China. Grow your own or buy locally because you want to make sure it's in good soils. And make sure you get your good B vitamins. If you have specific issues, go to a health practitioner. Go to someone who wants you to have good health, not someone who's just going to manage your symptoms. And so you want maybe a herbalist. Herbalists actually also have a lot of training in nutrition as well, tremendous training actually in nutrition. And I will say I've got a PhD in nutrition. That's where I identified the biochemistry for cellular healing, but it's the herbal medicine that's far more powerful. So from my perspective, your nutrition provides your basis, basic health. That's your preventative. That's, you know, what you want to make sure what you're eating in your daily diet is good to support your health. But if your health goes sideways, it's the herbal medicine that's far, in my mind, far more powerful because it's far more nutrient dense. So you can do more with it that helps keep all the nutrients in it. For instance, the herbal tinctures. I love herbal tinctures. So I have over 150 different ones in my dispensary, and I combine them in different ways for different people depending on what the need is. So there you have it. It's your GI tract minus the appendix, sorry about that. What you can do to keep it healthy, what you can do to resolve issues in it without having to go to an MD and pay for pharmaceuticals that manage symptoms. We want to eliminate the issue. We want to work with creating a good, healthy immune system from the gut, from the floor, from the foundation, all the way up. Okay? All right. That took a lot longer than I thought it was going to take. We're already 20 to the hour, so let's go over some questions. So the first question that Nicole sent was, hey, Holmes, in Los Angeles, I started gaining weight despite no change to what I'm eating. I feel heavy and sluggish and wonder what is causing that. Any insights Dr. Holly has would be great. Thanks. Would be great. Thanks. Okay. So this is a common issue that a lot of people send me questions about. And so while you may not be changing the food in your diet, the food itself is changing. For instance, have you noticed that food is going bad a lot quicker? I just live with my father now. When my mom crossed over, we decided we would move in together. So we both sold our homes and I built a new house. And so we live together. I used to, even for just the two of us, I used to buy things in bulk. I can't buy things in bulk anymore because they go bad too fast. So what is in the soil? What is being sprayed on the food before harvesting? What's sprayed on the food after harvesting, et cetera, is changing, and the food is changing with it. So while you may not be changing what you purchase, the food itself is changing. In addition, as you get older, you're more likely to put on weight with the same amount of food, so we need to eat less. Another question would be, does your food have the same fiber in it? The food that we grow in the garden is hugely more fibrous than food we buy in the store, and what's in the store is getting less and less fiber. What about the pre and probiotics? And whether the food is GMO? Are you looking for organic food? Do you know if the food is organic when it says it's organic, or do you have GMO foods? The fertilizers and sprays, like we just said, can affect what is in the food. So this is all good reason for you to grow your own food, as I keep pushing and pushing and pushing. Another factor may be your activity level. Has your activity changed? For instance, I used to walk 3 miles a day, twice a day with my big dogs. I don't have my big dogs now, so I don't do that walking. My activity level has definitely changed. But I try and compensate with that by doing yoga. So every half hour, in front of my computer, I stand up and do a lot of yoga, exercising and stretching and what have you to help with that. Another factor may be your stress level. Stress affects our adrenals. Whether it's physiological stress or psychological stress, our adrenals respond. Your adrenals can interfere with your thyroid, altering the functioning, the conversion of the T4 to T3 that happens in the liver, which we've addressed many, many times. If that's going on, then you may gain weight because of that. So you may want to read my book on weight management. It identifies a lot of different issues that may contribute to weight gain that you might not even have thought of, including things like metal toxicity, nutrient deficiency, et cetera, different functions in different organs, different probiotic profiles that goes through. I think there's 22 items. I wrote the book like 12 years ago, but I think there's around 22 items in there. So if you go to drhollybooks.com, you can get a book on how to manage your weight and look at all the other issues that may contribute. For me, it's genetic. I don't make certain enzymes and hormones. Consequently, I'm prone to gaining weight. So I have to work with that as well. All right, let's move on to Dylan in New York. How do we figure out what style, eating style is tight, right, I think is what he meant. How do we figure out what eating style is right for our bodies, meat or no meat, et cetera? So one quick, easy method is to look at your stool. You want to look at the frequency, the diameter, the length, the color, whether they're sinkers or floaters. So from a naturopathic perspective, you should have one, go to the bathroom to eliminate a stool, once for every meal you ate yesterday. So if you ate three times yesterday, you should actually go to the bathroom three times today. The stool should be on the size a loony, size of a loony, and it should be a medium to brown to a dark brown. It should be the texture of a banana, and it should be about 9 to 12 inches long and have about 60% bacteria. Well, that part you're not going to know, but the rest of it you should be able to determine. Another factor you can work with is the energy in the day. Now, if you say vegan, you may not be getting enough nutrient like B12 and iron. So there are many, many diets, from vegetarian to paleo to vegan to raw food, pescatarian, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how many diets there are out there nowadays. Personally, across the board, I would suggest that the Mediterranean diet is probably the best. Vegetables and fruits, whole grain, fish nuts, lentils, and they always say olive oil. I say avocado oil because olive oil isn't what it used to be. You can modify that with a lot of different things. So if you want to eat more or less meat, be more vegan or vegetarian, you can do that. They do eat poultry, eggs, dairy products, and meat, but in moderation. So to give you an example, I was vegan for 8 years. I was vegetarian for 10 years, trying to deal with my genetic disorder. I went back to being a Mediterranean paleo diet. I had steak the first night, I had pork chops the next night, and I had chicken the next night. I thought, yeah, I'm going to really test this out and see what happens to my body. I felt great. It was like my body suddenly woke up. So that could be I just wasn't getting enough iron or not enough B12, not enough B6. Who knows what it was? That was long before I became a doctor of natural medicine. But I can certainly say I do far better with a paleo-Mediterranean style of diet. What they do limit is refined grains, trans fats, processed meats, sugar, and processed foods, which I think is excellent because I don't think any of those are good for you. So again, you can use that as your basis and then go from there if you want to be more vegan or vegetarian, if you want to be more whatever, you can alter that basic Mediterranean diet. I think it's fantastic. I have people that come in that are, say, paleo diets, and I say, you know what, this isn't working for you. You need to get more vegetarian. Or I have people that come in vegan saying, this ain't working for you. You need to be more Mediterranean. So we're all different. We all, our DNA is different, and we have different processes in the body. So I just normally say a Mediterranean diet is a really good base diet to learn from, to work with. You can alter it up or down. From there, raw diet, now a lot of people find that raw diet, they claim, works really wonderful for them. Most people, they say, 70% of the people, it doesn't. It makes the body too cold. So in Ayurvedic medicine, it's too vata. In traditional Chinese medicine, it creates too much cold or too much qi. Too much qi, yin, creates too much yin in the diet, in the body. So it's not good for most people. So people that want to eat a raw food diet that I'm finding is not working for them. It's not activating the enzymes well enough. It's not doing a variety of different things. I just say, steam your vegetables. It's okay. Just, you know, you don't have to cook them. The less we cook food, the better it is. But we need to cook some of it. For instance, take a steak. To get the most nutrient out of a steak is to get it medium rare, not to cook it through and through like my mother would have done, not to have it raw, but to have it medium rare. To eat fish, you're much better off eating cooked fish than you are eating raw fish like they do with sushi. I love sushi, but I refuse to eat the raw fish. So there's a variety of different components that you can look at. And again, the best way is to, you know, which diet is best for me? Look at your body. What is your body doing with it? Are you having a good sleep? Are you having good energy throughout the day? Are you having good elimination? Those are your basic three that you would be wanting, okay? Hope that helps. And in Chicago, my sleep has been all over the place. How do we correct our circadian rhythms? Well, the number one issue would be discipline. Discipline, you go to bed the same night, same time every night and get up at the same time every morning, whether you go to sleep, whether you want to wake up or not. Very quickly, the body will readdress itself. It will reform the habits if you want, and you can do that. Now, some people find it easier. Say you're used to going to bed at midnight. And I'll say, you know, if it's really hard to alter it, then just try, say, first week, 15 minutes earlier. Second week, another 15 minutes earlier. Third week, another 15 minutes earlier. And do it in 15-minute increments like that. But there's a rule of thumb that actually has had scientific evidence behind it, that the more sleep you get before midnight, the better your circadian rhythms operate and the more effective the healing processes in the body operate, that we get actually more of them working before midnight than after midnight. So having your sleep regulated in that fashion is really, really good. Now, people that are night people go, but Holly, you know, I don't want to go to sleep before midnight. Well, you know, that's a choice you make. Like I said, there is science that suggests that indicates that the more sleep you get before midnight, the more effective your body functions. And sleep is a habit, so we can change that habit. Whether you want to abide by that or not is up to you. Now, beyond that, what else can we work with? Well, melatonin is hugely important. Melatonin we make 24/7. We store it in the pineal gland. We release it when we're going from stage 2 into stage 3 sleep. It helps us to stay in stage 3 and 4 sleep longer so that we can do more healing. It orchestrates all kinds of healing as well as helps to detox the brain. So it's very, very good for that. Another one that you can do is mealtimes. That's what I'm trying to think of. Mealtimes you can alter. Now, I haven't ever done this, and I've actually never suggested it to a client, but I have read it in a few different studies. The studies show that when you alter your meal times, you can affect your circadian rhythms. So that would go along with intermittent fasting. If you keep your food supply between 10, say, and 6, you go to bed at 10 and get up at 7, something of that nature, and do that religiously, you're going to alter your circadian rhythms. Sleep can also alter sleep quality, but you don't want to do a lot of exercise. I said, yeah, exercise can alter your sleep quality, but not after dinner. You shouldn't exercise right after a meal. You should give your body a half hour to an hour to digest the meal, then go do the walking, running, biking, whatever you'd like to do. Don't drink caffeine after dinner. That's all obviously can impact some people. For some people, it has no impact at all. My dad can wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, sit down, have a cup of coffee, and go back to bed, go right to sleep. Now, the logic behind that is traditional Chinese medicine that says it doesn't matter whether it has caffeine in it, it's whether or not it's heated. And if you have a hot drink before you go to bed, that will help you to sleep. The caffeine doesn't kick in for another hour and you're already asleep by then. So that depends on the body and how it responds to the caffeines. There's all kinds of companies that create a product called SomnaPro. SomnaPro is to help you go to sleep. And they work for some people, and you can get SomnaPro from one company and works excellent for this person, but not for the next person. So that they are different different brands have different formulations with different amounts in them, so you need to work with that. Like we said, GABA, I think I already mentioned GABA, helps the body relax. It helps the body go to sleep. I know if, you know, I've had a really active night and I should be going to sleep, but my system is fired up. If I just take a GABA, I'll be going to sleep within the hour. Now, with products like that, GABA, Somapro, there's a variety of them. You might want to figure out, do you need to take them like 20 minutes before you go to bed, or an hour before you go to bed, or after dinner? Because it depends on how well your system absorbs them and metabolizes them to when they're going to work. Also, you can think, say, melatonin. Some people take melatonin or GABA, and will say that in the morning they wake up and they're really, really sluggish. And I just say take it earlier in the evening before you go to bed. Now, one that is really odd is taking a cold shower. That sounds very counterintuitive, but if you take a warm shower, I don't suggest jumping into a cold shower. Start with a warm, end with a cold shower. The cold shower will help eliminate the positive ions and balance out the negative ions, which can then help you go to sleep. So that's another one. Apart from that, you know, going into a hot tub or what have you that has the jets that relax the muscles, and the heat, of course, helps to relax muscles. That's another one you can use as well to help you regain your circadian rhythms. So we do have a couple more questions from Nicole, but we're going to end it there because it's 12:56. So thank you very much for listening. My name is Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness, and we're working with the Whole Health Initiative on the News for the Soul program. If you want to get any information to contact me, choicesunlimited.ca is my website. As I've mentioned so many times, it used to have over 980 articles. We took them all down and decided not to put anything back up again because we don't want to get red flagged, and that way we can stay here and effective for all of you. So we do this program on a weekly basis, every Wednesday from 12 to 1, obviously. And I forgot to say, there's also drhollybooks.com. I've written well over 30 books. I think there's only 20 books on the site at this point. They're still being, actually I have two right now that are in editing process. Hopefully we'll be up there soon. So with all that, hopefully you got something out of the program, and hopefully you have some ideas on how to increase your health, do some preventative medicine, and make sure that you're healthy and well for life. With all that's going on in the outside, oh, I forgot to mention, let's do this real fast. I want you all to go to the SOGI123taskforce.com. It's hugely important around the world. It's a curriculum process that's being integrated with all the different curriculums for children, and it explains what the curriculum is really about and how abusive it really is. Go to SOGI123taskforce.com. Remember to look at that. Protect your children, protect your grandchildren, and know what they are actually being taught. Okay? That's it for today. See you next week. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.